That was bad.
Yeah.
Okay. It is Monday, December 11th, 6 p.m., and we will open the Historic Preservation Committee meeting. First of all, roll call. Bobby Frederick?
She's excused.
Okay. Howard Rook?
Here. Here.
Cecile Fowler? Here. Dina Mooney?
She's excused.
Sandy Juno?
Here.
And Jim Gingley?
Here.
Thank you. We will now look at the agenda. Is there any modifications or additions to the agenda for this evening?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have motion to approve and a second. The agenda is adopted. I would now ask that we look at the minutes from the October 25th, 2017 meeting.
I'm going to make a motion to approve.
And we have a motion to approve. A second?
I'll second.
Second. The minutes from the October 25th, 2017 meeting is approved. Announcements.
I have a few. The first one, an update on something we talked about at the last meeting, our ordinance update. I'm glad the committee member Mooney mentioned that to check to see if it needed a public hearing. It does. So it went to the public, the Plan Commission, and then now I'll go to the Village Board to schedule a public hearing next week. So that'll be likely January before that'll be a public hearing will take place. But Plan Commission reviewed it and approved it. The next thing is an update on the historic tax credits. I think we've talked about the state and how they put the cap on each property of $500,000. There's legislation being circulated right now that will increase that cap up to $3.5 million per property. So,
wow.
Pretty significant.
Substantial.
Yeah. So, if you recall, I went from having no cap, and then the governor introduced a $10 million cap for everything. Just everything. And then the state legislator put $5 million cap per project, and the governor removed a zero on there, and that made it $500,000. And now that legislature is going back to $3.5 million. So it's kind of been all over, but from what I'm told, this is something that will probably stick. And then as far as the federal historic tax credits go, the Senate passed a tax reform bill that would allow for the 20% historic tax credits to remain in place. But to be claimed within 5 years. And then the House is scheduled, I think, to vote on that tax reform bill. The way it sounds now is the House wants to remove it. So I guess it might be debated for a while before that issue is settled. And then the final thing I have is the CLG grant for the Robinson Hill and the Roger Minahan House. Those were submitted in November, and then we should be hearing back in February on those projects. So.
Good. Thank you. Any public appearances?
Can I go first?
Sure.
Take a number. Like a paper.
I don't know. Maybe we better see if it's okay.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. A couple different things. If the village is going to rewrite and resubmit and clean up the historic ordinance, I think we should take a look and do it completely so it reflects what you want the ordinance to say. For example, right now, as it's written, everybody in the historic district automatically becomes regulated by the certificate of occupancy, and that really wasn't supposed to be the plan for that, the certificate of compliance, right? Because that's heavy-handed, and you don't want to be regulating tuck pointing and gutters and everything. So I would take a closer look at it before it goes to the board and just make sure that it says what you really want it to say. I'm a realtor, and on our disclosure forms that we have, it's officially designated by the state on our forms that a historic district, being in a historic district, is a defect, which can be a problem because, for example, in this, you can be over-regulated. So we have our code as it's written right now hyper-regulates the people in that district, and if you happen to buy a property that is designated locally as historic, it becomes hyper-regulated. So what we should do is make sure that if you're going to regulate a whole district, a substantial number of people in that district have to affirmatively say, yes, we want to be regulated. So, for example, right now, the national standard is that if more than 50% of the people get upset and say they don't want to be regulated, then you don't have to regulate them. But that, as the national standard says, you have to go around and get signatures, have those signatures notarized. It's very difficult. What I would suggest is that if you turn it around, and that if a district, and there's no district that wants to be regulated very heavily in a mandatory way, but if, for example, you want to put the district on there that says you have to have certain color roof shingles and you have to have certain color siding and that type of thing, you can do it, but you should have everybody sign in on it when it's being put out there. And, you know, I would put a number of, you know, 60-70% of the people saying yes. Because you'll never get people to want to be regulated. It'll never pass. But it should be clear to people moving into Alloway that there's no intention to start doing the heavy-handed regulated that happens in a small number of historic districts around the country. So people are always afraid of that, and we have to make it very clear that we're not going that direction. If we want to regulate something heavily, so for example, a property that should be regulated heavily would be the Murphy Coles Gate. Okay? So the Murphy Coles Gate, that's owned by the state, and if we don't want that gate torn down, we can designate that as a local landmark, and then the state would have to, they can still tear it down when they expand the road, but they would have to jump through a lot of hoops. And normally they don't want to jump through the hoops, and they would come up with a better solution. So that's why the local designation is important, because it puts you on equal footing with the state when representing the local community. So CLG status is very good. It's good for us. But we have to make sure that people know that historic designation only has positive impacts and really has very, very minimal potential impacts, even if your board changes and different people come on, that you're not going to have somebody who gets on and becomes heavy-handed and regulates what you can do with the tuck pointing and everything else. So it should be voluntary, not compulsory. And then if we're going to be cleaning up the ordinance, we should make sure that it's clear, because you don't want to revisit this thing every year. So if it's going to be redone, we should take a look carefully at it and give it to the board in a more comprehensive plan than just in a more comprehensive manner than just striking a couple of the words that say National Register. So that's it. I'd like it cleaned up completely so we have the best ordinance, the most friendly, and one that creates value for a community instead of one that is kind of hostile. Thanks.
Just a question, Jim. You're referring to the local designation, correct?
I am referring to the entire ordinance. Okay, so local designation is the only area that is regulatory.
Right.
Okay, so national, you have carrot and stick. Okay,
right.
National and state are carrot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's all benefit, and local designation is the stick part. That's where they beat you up,
right,
and they can stop you from. I was just in the economic development meeting, and somebody in there is in the district, and he says, "I want to renovate my house." First thing he says is, "I hope it doesn't slow me down." I was going, you know, that was just in a random meeting. It was the first time it was announced, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was, you know, we had somebody who lived on Miramar, and he's going like, I just bought in there, and I want to renovate my house. I hope that historic designation won't mess it up.
But that is not locally designated.
Correct. So
sure.
You're going to clean that up. That's one of the parts.
So this particular gentleman, he wouldn't even be subject to it.
Right.
Under, you know, as the law stands right now, he is. Okay. So
okay.
You're going to clean it up. So that was the plan.
Yeah.
So as it stands right now,
right,
everybody in a historic district is regulated by the CLG. You can't make changes before they come before you on the outside of the house. Is that right?
So you're saying we're doing a good job?
I'm saying that by changing it, we're going to do a good job. Okay? So the
way
that
it's written right now.
What's that?
We're on the right track.
We're on the right track now.
We're supposed to.
But we need to just make sure that it's clear to everybody that we're not going to come back later and slap on heavy restrictions. So we have to clean up and make sure that we should say what are the types of buildings that we're going to regulate heavily, and that would be really the ones that are publicly owned. Right, like the pump house and the community center, and the structure, which is also publicly owned, which would be the Murphy Coles estate, because that's right on the border, and the state claims it as theirs, right? The Murphy Coles.
No, that's on private property.
It's funny, because it keeps changing back and forth, and I saw where they put the survey stakes. So the Murphy Coles property, the Murphy Coles gate is on private property.
As far as I know, yeah, right.
Well, that's what I thought it was, but I saw the survey stakes, and they were tucked back, and those people don't want to lose, you know, a couple feet. It makes a big difference to somebody when you're right on the highway. So that's the point, is that we're moving in the right direction, cleaning it up, but we just need to make sure that when somebody looks at our historic district, that they know that in the historic district, everything's voluntary and not mandatory and regulatory. In our historic districts, and that there's only a handful of situations when it's going to become burdensome. Okay.
And you mentioned in your notes, or maybe last meeting's minutes about Astor Park.
Astor,
do they have signage there? They got those brown signs?
Yeah. So Astor Park is very good. I think that Green Bay does a great job on theirs. In order to, you're just required to regulate in some way the ordinance, okay? And I've looked into this in different ways that communities do it. Astor, Green Bay is a little bit more involved than most. You have to, they're advisory instead of regulatory. You have to, if you want to do something substantial to the outside of the building, you have to wait a month and go before their committee and get permission. Okay, so it was pretty funny when the mayor went before the commission and he was not thrilled. So, but that's advisory. The easiest way to regulate a historic district is to say when somebody pulls a permit that they have to initial on the permit that they received a flyer from you that says this is general guidelines, because that's all people are looking for. They don't want to screw up their house. And some of the communities say that we regulate just by requiring them to just check off on the box if they're in a historic district that they've received a flyer that kind of gives some guidelines. And that's, I think that's about all we want to do instead of start telling people that they can't, the window style that they have to put in has to match what was there before, and it has to be wood instead of aluminum or vinyl. You know, so there's a lot of things that people want to preserve the integrity of their neighborhood, but if they want to put in a certain window, if they want to put in a bay window because they want a little bit more room, I don't want to tell them that they can't put in a bay window even though a bay window was never there. Mm-hmm. Okay? So same thing happens with an addition. If you're going to open up a dormer, sometimes people put a dormer and it shows on the front of the house because they need more room on the second or third floor. As that would trigger, you could delay them for months or years in here under the rules. Mm-hmm. But if you just say that it's voluntary and that the only requirement that they're required to do is check off a box that they've received some guidelines that we'd like to see done, and that satisfies the requirement, then you're meeting the state requirement for being for regulating a district without being too heavy on people. So I think that, you know, you both want to, you know, you want to change your house around a little bit, I'll listen to you, but at the end of the day, it's my house, and I'd like to be able to put it in the window style I want. Okay? Thanks.
I just have one question.
Yes.
As a realtor, you probably deal with a number of different municipalities.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there is one municipality that you think has a clear ordinance that pertains to this that would be better than others?
Everybody dances around, and nobody, or DePere is the most lenient. Okay, so the only people that have it would be DePere, Green Bay, and Alloway. So DePere doesn't like to regulate, you know, their people, so they don't enforce it on their districts. But I would take it one step further than DePere and then just have a guideline that people can see. Because people are very proud of their houses. They spend, you know, $150,000, $250,000 on something. They want to take care of it, and they want all the neighbors to work together. But the best one that I've seen throughout the country that, as a realtor, I thought was the nicest one, yet kind of told people moving into a neighborhood, was the idea that you gave them a trifold flyer that just says, this is what we'd like to see, and then you can put links online, and people end up, like on you, didn't you match, Howard, your colors on your house at one of your old houses?
Yeah.
So you're exactly the type of person that I want to move into a historic neighborhood. Somebody who cares about it says, yeah, I'm going to go out because I want it to be authentic.
And we painted it purple. No, I'm just kidding. The color.
Well, you can, if you want to, if you're a Vikings fan and you decide you want your house purple in Green Bay, we don't like it, but you can do it.
No, this was Minneapolis.
We should put that in there, though.
We were in a historic district,
right?
And we knew that, and so we did research and got something that, you know, looked like it might have looked in 1950.
Mm-hmm. And people do things, and they're become very proud, and it's
and we
very
were able to take advantage of the tax credit that was available.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was. My wife's the one that...
It's not a lot of money, but it's, you know, 20% is 20%.
Yep.
You know? And it really helps the neighborhood, and it creates... You should see what's happening in Robinson Hill right now. That Robinson Hill, that has galvanized the fact that they've been designated something special has galvanized that neighborhood, and they're saying, we'd like it to be even better. So now Robinson Hill is asking for sidewalks, and they're asking to be, you know, a better business district, and they're asking for all sorts of things now, which is good, because you want your older neighborhoods to say you're proud of it, and that everybody starts kind of taking care of it, and it's kind of fun to take care of the house. Okay?
Good. Thanks. Thank you, Jeff. If there aren't any further public appearances, any further discussion or action on the certificate appropriateness form and process?
It appears fairly similar to De Pere, just a little different format, I guess, with the sections and stuff, but...
Yeah, and actually, if I can just say a few things. It's good to hear that De Pere's a good ordinance, because we actually, a few years ago, Howard, I think, was the only one here that was on the committee at the time, we reviewed our ordinance at that time, and kind of came up with everything how it is now, and we used De Pere as that model ordinance. I think the only difference between De Pere and Alloway is that we say that a certificate of appropriateness should be reviewed within 30 days, and that De Pere says it should be reviewed within 45 days. So actually, ours is a little more lenient than theirs. But I gave you a sheet of what De Pere uses, and I know I heard a few comments before the meeting that De Pere, this is pretty nice and convenient. It's one sheet with simplified guidelines on the back, and it kind of breaks down everything and what is the review timeline and procedure. Says that, you know, 45 days, that it has to go through the Historic Preservation Committee to be reviewed. So, and then the decision will be based on the six criteria. We had those same six criteria in our ordinance as well. The good thing about our ordinance is it doesn't specify the type of application we need to have. It just says that, that the committee will review an application. So, if you see something on the Pure application that you like that's different from ours, we're able to change that without making it an ordinance change, which is a lot easier to do. We don't have to go through the public hearing process for that. But attachments-wise, as far as the Pure and ours, relatively the same. The guards is number 7 there, and the peers is section 4 there. Looking at other municipalities, I actually found quite a few of them, and I have a few on the screen. We have Neillsville, and it's real simple. Just discuss what you're planning on doing. Real basic. City of Beloit. Theirs is very similar to ours. I actually found a few that were very similar to ours, and I'm guessing that at the time ours was written, it was probably a model that we just kind of borrowed from. This one is from the city of Evansville. And again, it's relatively the same, just different format. The city of Platteville is a little bit more specific as far as what they want. This one is West Allis. And again, and these are all relatively the same. Some of them require little, or some of them require about as much as we require right now. And then example, because I know we don't review very many certificate appropriatenesses. Since I've been here, we've never done it. I've been here since 13. I think the only one is in Heritage Hill that would be reviewed. Because first you have to locally designate it, and then from there, anything that's locally designated, then you review the certificate of appropriateness. So the city of Milwaukee keeps a list on their website, and they have, as you can see, a pretty extensive list of local designation they have. And I'll just click on one of these. So they reviewed it. For example, they wanted to put, this is a commercial building, they wanted to put an awning on the front. So they reviewed it and they They must have said that it was okay. But I was clicking on a few of these this afternoon, and this one was a house that was turned into commercial. They just wanted to put new gutters and a new roof on, and it was approved. So, fairly straightforward. I would imagine our process to be the same thing. I know a few years ago it was kind of brought up what our ordinance did, so I had presented to the village board this this slideshow presentation, so I'm just going to pull up a few highlights from the presentation. This is a map of all the certified local governments in Wisconsin. This is a few years old, so there might be a few additions or some that have been removed, but as you can see, that Alloway and DePere pretty much only ones in, or are the only ones in Brown County. Then you have Appleton and Nina. And this is the purpose of our ordinance. To me, it's easier to think of our ordinance more as a zoning ordinance, because that's actually where we get our authority from to designate properties as locally historic, is our zoning authority from the state. And that's actually why the state and the national government can't necessarily tell property owners what to do, because that's our zoning authority. So some other municipalities have historic preservation districts, as far as like a residential historic district, and then they set guidelines much like you would setback guidelines and different things like that for zoning. So this is the process that a property owner, if we saw a site or a structure that we wanted to locally designate, we'd have to review it and pick it, and then we'd have to notify the property owner and have a public hearing, and then the village board makes a decision, and then we again notify the property owner. The same with the district, except with the district, the Historic Preservation Committee actually has to have a public hearing, as well as the village board. And then this is the process for a certificate of appropriateness committee. The homeowner files one with our building inspector and myself. Committee reviews it. We have 30 days to approve or deny it. And if the petitioner doesn't like the decision, then they can appeal to the village board and have it reversed. This is if the property owner wants to raise the building for a residential structure, they actually have 90 days for the historic preservation to review it, and residential is 60 and a commercial is 90. And at the end of the day, if the historic preservation and village board on raising a structure come to different opinions, after that certain review period, property owner can still raise their building. This was just put into place more as a cooling off period. As you recall, back in 2010, this was before my time, but the diocese wanted to raise that structure up on Webster. And that's actually how the whole committee and everything started, was as a result of everything that went on there. So just a brief overview of what other municipalities do and what we do. Again, I'm glad to hear DePere has good ordinance, because ours is pretty similar to theirs.
And Trevor, do you or you and other staff feel that this is appropriate and that it's ready to be used? I mean, it's been through the process a little bit, and
yeah, I mean, again, we have no properties that are locally designated. Yeah, we're clarifying our ordinance, and hopefully after the first of the year and we have that public hearing, the board will adopt that to simplify things so that it's only locally designated structures that will have to go through this process. Do I think the application can be updated? Probably. I do like what DePere has. It's, I like that they have the bullet points to explain the whole process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I particularly like the guidelines. Otherwise, I think it's unclear as to when a certificate appropriateness is actually needed. And I think they're bullet points as to it's only needed if it's locally designated, not needed. I mean, it's very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a property owner would want to know that. Or if they're buying a new home, would want to know, you know, ABC, let's make it as straightforward as possible so there isn't any question.
Yes.
And then it just goes on as to what is needed if you have to apply and then what's the timeline.
Right. And they gave us permission to copy and paste.
Yeah, because I think that's what this is, ours is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because ours, I agree, it's good to be able to read the process rather than just fill out the forms and it's okay. But I like the second bullet point that you were referring to, probably. Certificate is not needed if the site, structure, or district has been designated as historic nationally and or by Wisconsin, but not by the city of DePere.
Mm-hmm.
So that in case anyone is still unclear after we have the ordinance reviewed in a public hearing, and, you know, as you mentioned, the Plan Commission recommended approval of what we put together, you know, and we tried to make that statement up front, you know, that if it's locally designated, doesn't mean that your national register, your National Historic Register property is affected. So it's just a book. I like the words behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like our format better. I mean, kind of hard to write on. I don't know. Some combinations. But I like the words.
Mm-hmm.
Can I speak?
Oh, go ahead.
DePere came up with this because they really don't regulate any residential houses. After we bought it up, they designated two structures in DePere. There's only two structures in DePere, last time I looked, which was their museum, their historic museum, and the Polo Resto. So they only have two locally designated historic places, which is great because you don't want to be putting a heavy burden on a lot of properties. So if somebody wants their property perpetually regulated, they can volunteer to have that. Again, if someone, let's say that somebody has, for whatever reason, their family built the house and whatever, they can apply and become a locally designated. But I think that the default setting is that we don't require a certificate of appropriateness on many properties at all, and that it's, especially in the historic districts, it's all voluntary compliance unless we say otherwise. But I think that it should be in there that historic districts are all voluntary compliance, so there's no question, and that if somebody wants to have their house individually designated as historic, whether it's in the district or not, because we have ones outside, they can apply that. But the default setting on historic districts is that they're not locally, we don't have locally designated historic districts, because that impacts a lot of people. A lot of people don't come to these meetings. So that's what I would, the default setting is that historic districts are not designated, locally designated, and that I would encourage people to the village to give people flyers on what historic preservation is all about and put in there that it's all voluntary and that it's really going to help Miramar kind of takes care of itself. The Robinson Hill people, they're going to need a little bit more help because they have a wider variety of housing stock. So they have more buildings, they have about 90, and they have a wider variety of housing stock covering a wider variety of years. So if they had just a flyer and said that we're not regulating you, it's all voluntary, but this is what we like to see. The problem that you have is if too many people change the overall nature of their house, if everybody changes their house dramatically, at some point the district could become not historic anymore. Mm-hmm. But if people decided that that wasn't important to them, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Right. Okay. So, Trevor, what do you think next step would be in this process then?
I guess I can try and modify our form.
Okay.
And like Howard said, I can kind of take mm-hmm. things from both forms and make something new. I do like that it's one page. That's nice. And then probably I would want to put something together almost exactly like this backside for us, mm-hmm. modified to our code. I think that's probably the next step. Maybe if the committee wants to review the ordinance in full a little further, and if there's any questions, we can talk about it at a future meeting. Otherwise, I mean, we just play that by if the committee wants to or not.
So we could recommend sending this back to you, to staff, whatever, to kind of combine the two, the better parts of both, and then bring it back for mm-hmm. approval?
Yeah.
Can we do that? I would make that motion to modify it, given the two formats, and pick the best of each and put it together.
And review and make sure that the ordinance says what you want it to say.
Right.
You know, that it's voluntary in the districts.
Mm-hmm.
I would second that motion.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Update on the status of the Miramar Drive Residential Historic District.
I know I emailed everyone on the committee, but just so that it's on public record, that Miramar District was approved at the state level. And from what I've heard from the state, they don't like to guarantee 100% anything, but they said with a good degree of certainty that once it gets to this point and is approved by the state, that there's a pretty sure chance that it will be approved by the National Park Service. They use the same criteria to evaluate things, so that's, I think this National Park Service has 90 days to review and get back to us, so we should know by March or so.
Action regarding the street signs for Miramar Drive.
So this was something that we discussed at a previous meeting that kind of spun from the Historic Galleries Society asking if they could partner with us on certain things. And knowing that the Miramar Drive Historic District seems to be moving forward, one thing that we talked about doing is maybe having something in May as part of Historic Preservation Month with the two organizations, the Village and Historic Galleries Society. And as part of that event in May, we could have an unveiling of new street signs. Mm-hmm. And these signs would be similar to what you see in Astor Park, those brown route signs. And so there would be, there'd be two at Webster. So Webster and Miramar, and then Ducharme and Miramar, and Riverside and Miramar.
Nice.
They had talked with our street foreman. He would suggest getting new brackets because we use silver brackets. And he thought black ones would dress it up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So with the sign and the brackets, it's about $45-$50 per sign. So it's six signs times 50, about $300 is what we're looking at. Spoke with our administrator. He thought that, that's a project that would be doable. So I guess if the committee's on board with that, then certainly like a recommendation that I could take to the village board and get that project approved by them. And we could order those signs once, as soon as we hear that it for sure is approved by the National Park Service.
Any questions? Or
I had just a question on when you were describing where the signs would be placed. Did you say at the intersection of Miramar Drive and Webster?
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of misleading, or does it, because that first part of Miramar Drive is not included.
Correct? Right, it kind of picks up right after that bend.
It picks up at the bend, so if the sign is on Webster Avenue,
mm-hmm.
people would think that all those homes up to the actual beginning district border would be included. I don't know. Just
I thought about that myself.
I mean, it's good to have, otherwise nobody sees it if it's not there. But yet,
that was my rationale, was driving it there, drawing attention to it.
Yeah.
And then including those probably six or so homes there are east of Ducharme on Miramar. But, yeah.
That's okay. I just, you'd already thought about it.
Whatever the committee's comfortable with, though.
Well, I think the placement on Webster would be appropriate because if nobody's going to see it, if it's into the neighborhood already, it kind of defeats the purpose of a sign.
Yeah.
Well, and then one of the other things is if you put it on Webster and then also on Ducharme and Alloway Avenue, adding one more, those homes can be added. You can expand a historic district as the homes age a little bit, so the ones they may not quite fit, but your historic district, those signs don't have to include everything. It's cut out, you don't want to be too far away, but they can kind of direct people in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way that Astor Park is not all the homes in Astor Park are, it's not cookie cutter, it's not clearly defined, they have a jagged shape to them, so not all of the homes are so that's,
and is there also far. There would be one on Martha, there's that little one block of Martha or something there kind of between Ducharme and Webster, right? So, and it comes in there right by the curve. Has that got a sign now? I don't even know.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pushing the envelope a little bit, and you just have to decide if that's, if you feel comfortable with it. Getting the people in there and designating it, I think that those homes on the bend up on Miramar, you can ask that those become a extension of the historic district. Historic districts are allowed to be expanded if appropriate.
And most of that is older stock, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of them, those were really good. That was the original downtown. And they changed a lot, but those houses right there are pretty good.
Well, I'd recommend doing, I'll make a motion to recommend to the board that we go ahead with this plan as described on the handout here. And $50 per sign for $300 for the project, or up to that, whatever.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'd second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I believe, Trevor, you gave us an update on the Robinson Hill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any update on the Elway Waterworks building?
I couldn't remember the timing of our last meeting if I mentioned that we do have an accepted offer on that property.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be closing at the end of the month. So it's a pretty exciting project. And I think if there's any substantial modifications to that building, then the committee will review those changes. So it sounds like at the moment the gentleman that is purchasing it wants to have a living space in it as well as a recording studio. So not sure as far as timeline, as far as when he hopes to do that, but definitely keep you informed.
What's the status of that other property that they were by McDonald's that was being torn down?
I don't know if our building inspector sent out the RFP today or if he's planning this week sometime.
Oh.
But we're sending out an RFP to have the property raised, or not an RFP, I'm sorry, a bid request. And so I think how it reads is that we need everything in by mid-January and hoping to have it raised in early part of February.
And would it be placed on the market once the building is raised?
So it's still owned by the property owner.
Oh, it is still owned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that property owner has title to the property.
I'm sorry?
The property owner has the title to the property even though we're raising the building?
Correct.
Okay.
Then the cost of the raising will go on his tax bill?
Right.
When does that happen? Gets thrown on, that's just like regular tax, so he's got a couple years to pay it, and if not, then it goes into.
That's a good question. I don't.
And the county would take it after 3 years. I think that's 3 years, yeah.
Because were we guesstimating 45,000? Or there, I remember that figure, somewhere 40 to 60, depending if there's asbestos or lead or whatever in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, maybe I dreamt up that number. I don't remember.
That sounds right. Sounds
yeah.
It sounds right, but I haven't been working specifically on that project, so I don't know if that number's changed at all or not, but
yeah.
I believe that's what they originally were talking about.
I mean, it appears fairly simple, but it is brick and concrete and all that, so, you know, might be built better than you think. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the requirements will be bringing it back to what they call metal conditions, so they'll have to see it, remove all the asphalt. That likely won't happen in February, but.
Yeah. Well, I would think that would be a pretty desirable property.
I would think so.
You know, not that there isn't other stuff on Webster, but still, you know.
Okay, anything further? Any other announcements? If not, our next meeting date.
What is the norm? 4th?
24th of January, I think it looks like. The next regular be scheduled one.
Oh, what's that date? I'm sorry.
January 24th.
24th of January.
Does that work for everyone?
Yep, as far as I know, for me.
Yep.
Wednesday. Yep. Hard to relate that that's the next meeting. So.
A lot will happen between now and then.
Okay, anything further from the committee?
I'd make a motion to adjourn.
All right. Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Meeting is adjourned.
A lot of territory there.
Mm-hmm.